Hearings on the nomination of Ash Carter to be the next defense secretary will get underway next month. There'll be much more than a discussion of Carter's qualifications, though. The 2016 budget proposal will be out then, so the hearings will likely cover a lot wider ground. So, will it be smooth sailing for the president's nominee or a bumpy road? For some insight, we turn to defense analyst Nora Bensahel. She's a distinguished scholar in residence at American University. Nora, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So these confirmation hearings are really literally going to occur just as the budget for 2016 hits. And so what do you expect for Ash Carter, first of all?
Well, I think that Ash Carter is going to be confirmed. Most of the people on the Hill who have been interviewed have expressed unqualified support for him. He clearly has tremendous experience in the defense world, having served in this administration in the first Obama term as Deputy Secretary of Defense. He had previously been the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology. But his confirmation hearings are probably going to be quite rocky. Senator McCain, who is now the new chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, has already said that he intends to use the hearings as a mechanism to criticize the administration's foreign policy. In the statement that where he said that, he called the administration's foreign policy feckless. So I think Ash Carter's in for a rough hearing, but I think that he will be confirmed, if not unanimously, then fairly close to it.
Now, on the House side, yesterday there was a big speech by Mac Thornberry, who is the new chairman of the House side Armed Services Committee. And he says he's going to start with acquisition, which seems like kind of an in-the-weeds area for such big questions as to what the size and scope of U.S. defense activity should be in the next 4, 5, 10, 20 years.
It is in some ways, but in others it isn't, because it consumes so many defense dollars. The increasing acquisition costs are one of the reasons why the sequestration cuts hit so hard, is because it's accounting for an ever-increasing percentage of the defense budget. Acquisition reform is an incredibly difficult problem. There have been studies done on how to reform the process for 30 to 40 years now that have all concluded the basic same things. The problem is that they're very, very difficult to get done politically. The incentives are all aligned against them. So I think it's a really good sign that Representative Thornberry has said that and intends to make that a priority. It's certainly going to be something that Ash Carter would want to focus on as Secretary of Defense. Again, I mentioned his background as being in charge of acquisition for the Pentagon. But, you know, when you're Secretary of Defense, you also have to be involved in world issues. And I think as much as he would like to make that, one of the achievements of his tenure, if he is confirmed, I think that that's going to be a very, very difficult area to make progress on, even if it's a very high priority of Ash Carter as the new secretary and Representative Thornberry as the new head of the House Armed Services Committee.
I mean, to foreign leaders that do come by the Pentagon or to which they travel, I mean, Ash Carter would be a more impressive figure than, say, Les Aspin, who didn't turn out so well when appearing before, with other foreign leaders.
Well, he's certainly going to be well-known to many foreign leaders because he's been in the defense business for a very long time, for most of his career, going back and forth between academia, where he wrote extensively on security issues, particularly nuclear issues, earlier in his career at the end of the Cold War, and progressing all the way through to, as I said, having served as the Deputy Secretary of Defense. So he will certainly be well-known, and I think already has a lot of very good relationships with the highest levels of defense ministries and in politics in general in other countries.
Now, the other difficult elephant in the room, and this is going to be particularly hard now for people like John McCain, and that is the personnel costs, health care, pensions, and all of this that everyone knows are a big problem for the military, especially when you look at it actuarially. Do you expect anything to get moving in the next 2 years on that one?
I hope so, but I'm not particularly optimistic. That is second, acquisition reform is second only to that in terms of costs that are eating up the defense budget. The problem there isn't the mechanics of it and the internal incentives is a lot of the problem with the acquisition reform. The main issues there are political. veterans groups and, you know, retired officers associations, and a lot of people who are currently in the military are very opposed to changing those things, even though all of the proposals for reform that I've seen would grandfather in anybody who's currently serving, as well as those who are currently retired. Any of the changes that are proposed would be for new entrants only. Even that would save a tremendous amount of money. But there is tremendous political opposition that gets very concentrated and focuses on key members in Congress. And so there has not been a lot of congressional willingness to take that on. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing, even if Senator McCain and the new Secretary of Defense make that a high priority.
We're speaking with Nora Bensahel. She's a distinguished scholar in residence at American University. I guess we should point out that's a new post for you.
It is. It is. It's my second week there, and I'm loving it so far.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. You're just around the corner from our elegant studios in Upper Northwest D.C. And so getting back to some of the issues more currently for DOD, there are going to be debates over this platform and that platform and even size of current troops and so forth, troop levels in the different armed services. Looking ahead, what do you think will come out of all of this? The smallest size that's proposed by the administration, or something larger than that?
Well, I think it's not really clear right now. I think for a long time, most of last year, it was pretty clear that the force levels were going to shrink to very low numbers, particularly in the Army. You know, plans were for it to shrink from its current size down to the planned size of 490,000 troops down to 420,000 troops on active duty. I think a lot of the uncertainty that we've seen in the world last year, particularly in the second half of the year, the United States getting involved in the fight against ISIS, the continuing crisis in Syria, and Russian aggression in Ukraine earlier last year, I think a lot of that has prompted some in Congress to rethink that, defense analysts to rethink that a little bit as well. So I don't think we may not see quite as low troop levels as we might have a year ago when we were sort of looking ahead. But I still think there's going to be a tremendous cut in personnel, with the Army going maybe to 450,000 instead of 420,000. That's still a 40,000 person cut. But simply because personnel are so expensive, and particularly the medical costs and retirement costs, that's increasing inside the military the same way that Social Security costs and Medicare costs are increasing in the rest of the government for civilians. So there's going to be personnel cut, just maybe because of world events, not as quite a low level as we might have thought last year.
So it doesn't sound like anybody's going to be really in a serious way looking out 25 or 50 years, because that's how long it would take for some of these changes, say, in personnel costs to really manifest themselves in a permanent way.
The way that you calculate it, it's very arcane, but the way that you calculate it and the way that you contribute to the funds that go towards retirement and so on actually do save money in the short run, because of the way that DOD allocates contributions based on how many people are currently in the force. So you're right, the full benefits of that would be a long time away, but you would see some much shorter-term benefits as well.
And finally, what do we know about Ash Carter in terms of what he thinks about these things in political terms? I mean, Bob Gates probably was slightly to the right of center, but he was really an iconoclast in a lot of ways. And Leon Panetta, same way. What do we know about Ash Carter? What does he think? How does he think strategically, or does he?
He does, and you can see that in a whole lot of his writings. As I said, he has gone back and forth between government service and academia throughout his career, and so he has a very, very long publication list.
He's a physicist, too, isn't he?
He's a nuclear physicist who also studied medieval politics, so quite an interesting background. He has a reputation for calling things like he sees it. He's obviously been affiliated with the Democratic Party, always served in Democratic administrations, but has government experience in Republican administrations too, a bit as well. And I think that, I don't think he's going to be particularly easy to peg ideologically. I think he's an analyst at heart, a scientist at heart, and I think he will, approach problems in that way, looking for practical solutions. Now, that doesn't mean everyone's going to like them. That doesn't mean they will always be right. But I don't think we're going to get, a lot of ideology out of him. I think we'll get more of a focus on what the problems are and trying to look for solutions.
Nora Bensahel is a distinguished scholar in residence at American University. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.